Okay, so here we are back studying Pali. I'd like to bring everyone's attention to page 12 to start. Kula. Now, by now, you've all memorized the 13 regular paradigms and can recite them back to me. Anyone, can I have a volunteer to go through Purisa for me? Don't all jump at once, please. Just need one. Tell me someone actually memorized the 13. The first one? Did anyone memorize Purisa? I don't know if I can continue teaching a group that doesn't do their homework.
Which page is it, Mante?
Well, I'm on page 12, but I need you to recite back to me all that you've memorized over the past week. Don't be shy. I'm sure you've all done... I'm betting no one did it. Did no one do their homework? No one did their homework.
There's a difference between trying to do your homework and being confident enough to actually say it out loud.
Well, did anyone do their homework? It wasn't mandatory. I'm kind of joking with you because I wasn't really expecting. I was hoping, but not expecting.
The Purisa, that one, and
starts
Purisa.
Starts with Puriso.
Oh, okay. Purisa, Purisena, Purisa. Mm-hmm. Oh, Purisa.
Yeah.
Purise.
No.
Purisa.
Purisa. Purisa. Purisa. Purisang. Purise. Purisena. Purisehi. Purisasa. Purisaya. Purisatang. Purisanang. Are you reading it or remembering it?
I'm trying to remember, but I don't think I have it in order.
Well, you have to go left to right. The traditional way is left to right. Left, right, left, right, left, right. Puriso, purisa, purisang, purise, purisena, purisehi, purisasa, purisaya, purisatang, purisanang, purisasma, purisamha, purisa, purisehi, purisebhi, purisasa, purisanang, purisasming, purisamhi, purise, purisesu. This isn't on page 12. This is on one of the earlier pages. Purisa, purisa. But that's purisa. Anyway. I'm not going to go through them all with you, so hopefully you can at least read through them and get a sense of them, and hey, maybe even memorize some of them.
I can't memorize them all.
I want to look at Kula, because Kula is actually follows Purisa almost. This should also be Kula. Kul. We'll just leave it like that anyway. Except the first three. So Kulang.
No, the first four, right?
Yeah, the first two and then the fourth one are different. So Kulang instead of Kulo, right? This is A, but because it's neuter, it's
Kulang, not Kula,
Kulo. Like it's Puriso, but here it's Kulang. And Kulani. The Ani on the end, or Ini, or Uni. These are neuter forms, so when you see them, you should recognize them as a plural form of a neuter noun. Okay, that was all.
Bahu meaning plural.
Yeah. Okay, now moving on to page 13. So those are the three neuter forms, the a, I and U, A, I and U forms. And then we get on to the irregulars. Again, I'm not going to go through them all. You should recognize them from the earlier forms if you were actually going to move this. So now it's on page 14. You should recognize some of the forms. Atta is only singular. There's no plural form of atta. It's never used that way. If you want to use it in plural, the way they do it is they put it twice. So they say atta, atta means many, many selves. The only way they'd use that. And there's no plural form of self. Apparently it's never used that way. Then there's Brahma, Raja, Bhagavantu, Arahanta, Bhavantu, Satu, Pitu, Matu, Mana, Kamma. He's missing Kamma there. Kamma. And Go. So these are irregular in the sense that there's supposed to be no words that follow them. Now, the truth is that there's actually just a few words that follow some of them. Now, some of them don't have any that follow, but some of them do. Bhagavantu actually has a lot that follow it. Any word that ends in vanta, Bhagavanta, it should be Bhagavanta. Bhagavanta. Bhagavantu, I don't know actually.
Does Bhagava have words that follow?
Bhagavantu has words that follow it, because any word that ends in vantu, like sati, vantu or mantu, sati mantu, one who has sati, chaku mantu, that kind of thing. And there's a list down below. We'll get, you'll see them if you go through it. Pitu has a couple that follow it, like the word for brother. Matu has daughter. Ditu follows it. Mana is actually a group of 12 words. And I hope he's put those in here. Let's scroll down and see. Yeah, we got a bunch of words that follow mana. Mana meaning mind. And these you have to memorize as well, because they're often on the exam. Mana, aya, ura, jeta, tapa, tamma, teja, paya, yasa, vacha, vaya, sira. 12 words that follow the same form. Mano, mana, manang, mane, manasa. And the difference is it's only different in a few forms. Manasa. And this is a common form that gets you, because you don't have a clue what manasa, because it looks nothing like any other form. A little bit like a 3-1 form. Manaso looks nothing like any other form. And these endings are actually, they're actually borrowed by certain words in poetry or in verse, that kind of thing. Manasa, manaso, manasa, manaso, manasi. Manasi makes sense, but it's still an irregular form. The truth is the word should be manas. And in the Sanskrit dictionaries, this is how it's described as being manas. And that's where the S comes from. It's a special word that has an S ending. Manas. That's where the word namas comes from. Namaste. Namaste is actually two words. Shouldn't actually be a compound, I don't think. It should be probably namate. I don't quite understand how you get namaste, because that kind of compound shouldn't really exist.
I thought manasate was a compound, like a one word.
J is if. J means if.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Manasa. Manasa means... What does manasa mean?
Mind.
No.
Oh.
It's a 3-1 form, so what does it mean?
Oh, no, no.
Has anyone been following? Does anyone know what a 3-1 form means?
With your mind?
Yes, with or by the mind. So now you can translate what that those first two words mean of that that line in the verse. Manasa che padutena. What does that mean? Manasa che. Che means if. Manasa means
with the mind.
If with a mind. And then padutena is a adjective that modifies manas or mano. So it's actually describing the kind of mind. And that's why it has ena, you see. It's padutena. The ena on the end is because manasa is also 3-1. So it has to follow as a 3-1 form. So you have a mind with a mind that is padutta. Padutta means fully corrupted. It means corrupted. Pa means it's a strengthening, and dutta means dush is a root that means to defile or to destroy or to corrupt.
What does manosita is that? Manosita.
Yeah, that's manosita. The compound. It's a compound, and it's a word that is modifying dhamma. It's plural, actually. Seta is the long A, right? So manoseta is referring to the dhammas. Manopubangama dhamma. All dhammas are manopubangama. That's what kind of dhammas they are. Manopubangama dhamma. All dhammas are manopubangama. They are also manoseta. So that's why this is the long ending on each of those words, the long A, because dhamma is long A plural, right? A 1-2 form is like purisa, it's dhamma. That's why you have manoseta, manomaya. In compounds, of course, the first word, it's only the last word, the ending only goes on the end, right? So mano doesn't change to mana. It's in a compound, so it doesn't have any ending. It keeps mano.
Okay, thank you.
That is actually interesting because it shouldn't be mano, right? It should be mana.
I thought
mana seta, but right. This is an interesting point for mana, is that in a compound, it often keeps the o.
Okay, thank you. And manomaya, shouldn't that be manamaya? Oh no, because it follows the manosita. I'm sorry, I got confused.
Another thing is mana is masculine. All right, it says below. Words that follow the same form as mana but are only in masculine form. Ah, okay. So mano is either masculine or neuter. Sometimes it's a neuter form. And that's important because when you're dealing with adjectives that modify it. And if there's an adjective that modifies mana, then it can take a neuter form. But the rest here, it says, I think that's correct, are all masculine. I would have said they're all neuter, but I guess they're all masculine. Yeah, yeso, yesa, yeso. So they are masculine.
Just for the benefit of the recording, we're up now on page 17.
Right. Okay, we've already gone through Sabbanama. So the only thing left to talk about is Sandhi, I think. Anything after Sandhi? Oh, and then we've got indeclinables, but again, I'll have to talk about them, but not a lot to go through. And then, oh, of course, and then we've got verbs and all that. Yeah, so we've got Sandhi and we've got verbs. Sandhi, indeclinables, and verbs. Sandhi is a big topic. I actually don't feel like getting into it, so why don't we do some translation instead? Or do you guys want to learn about Sandhi?
Hey, it's fine with me. Whatever is beneficial for everyone.
It's your preference. We can do Chakupala or we can do Sandhi.
Chakupala is kind of fun.
Chakupala? Yeah.
Sure is.
Okay, so quick translation. I said Go met cow, and the Bodhisattva's family name was Gotama.
There may be some relation, but Gotama actually means turtle, I believe. Wait, yes, I think so.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not sure about that, just a second here. No, there's no... So, Google search where I got that word from. Go and Dhamma. Go meaning bright light. Dhamma meaning darkness. The dispeller of bright light. One who brings bright light to darkness. I thought it meant turtle. I think it's another one of the Buddhas that means turtle. Like. Sakusanda, I don't know.
Bringer of light from dark.
Gaha. Dhamma. Interesting. Gao. Go doesn't really mean bright light. I don't know where that comes from. Go, go, go.
I don't know if this is from the Sanskrit, but I always thought it meant like best cow.
No, because, oh, that's right. Dhamma means best, right? Dhamma does mean darkness, so that's interesting. Speller of darkness. It's supposed to be his clan name, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Isn't it the Shakya clan?
A descendant of the cow, it says. I've got one here that says descendant of the great ox. Literally descendant of the great ox. Go Dhamma.
It's kind of close to a cow.
Well, go is, yeah. Go means cow or ox or whatever.
So
oh, yes. This one says the greatest of the cow. Superlative of gaha. Gaha. Which means go. Yeah. And the superlative of go, so. Dhamma would be the ending for if somehow you could turn cow into an adjective. So the alpha bull. In other words, we don't have a clue what it means. It could mean any of these things.
So back then, if you call someone a cow, it's actually good.
Yep. Well, even in the West, if you call someone a cow, it's good, supposed to be a good thing. Not a cow, sorry, it's not a good thing. A bull, I was thinking of. Strong like an ox, right? I guess it's not good, is it?
Yeah, bull is better than cow.
But you're an ox isn't a good thing, is it? Anyway.
Usually it's accompanied by clumsy.
Anyway, so let's get on to this here. We finished the first the first sentence of the second, third paragraph, let's say, where it starts, Sawat Tiyang. So the first big paragraph, we finished the first sentence, talking about the Kutumbika, the householder, the landowner named Mahasuwana, one of much gold, who had no son. The most important thing about him, he had no son, because that's important for the story. Okay, next sentence. So here. Anyone know what so means?
He.
So means he. It's a 1-1 form of the sabbanama, which we learned about last week. Sabbanama ta. Ta becomes so for some reason. It's very irregular. So ta tang te. That's how the paradigm goes if you go back and read it. So this means he. It's masculine. If it was feminine, if it was a woman, she, then it would be sa with a long a. If it was neuter, it would be tang. T-A-ung. Here we have so. So means he. He, this is referring back to the householder. He, eka divasang is a time, it refers to a time. Divasat means a day. We're on page 3. And with time, in translations, you want to pull it out because it's not going to fit anywhere in the sentence. It doesn't relate to anything, it's just a time thing. If you're placing a sentence, placing an event in a time, take the time words out. You can translate them first if you want. In Thai, I think you're supposed to translate them first, but Thai word order is different. So in English, it's up to how you want to put it, but just we can take it out here. So we can say, one day he, or he, comma, one day, comma, if you want. If you want to be exact with your word order. One day he... And then we've got this long sentence. So let's be clear how long this sentence is, right? So let's see if we can find these fathers. Okay, this is how long the sentence. This is what we call in English a run-on sentence. You would never want to make a sentence this long ever in English, I don't think. Well, hardly ever. Except this is terribly, terribly common in Pali. And the way it's most often constructed, as it's constructed here, is it just me or is this text very small?
So even with a sentence this long, you still have to go to the last word and then go from right to left in translation?
Page 3 just became page 4.
Sorry. Figure something out here. Not working. If the text is too small, and just zoom in. Sorry, what was the question?
If the sentence was that long, you still have to go to the last word of the sentence?
No.
And then go...
Because you have what is called a pada, I think is how they refer to it, but a clause. This is our first clause here. Or, no, not clause, not pada, it's bhaga. They call in Thailand, they call them bhagas. I don't know if that's the technical term, but we call them bhagas. Bhaga means a section. Or a part. And the part, each part has to have, almost always has to have a verb. If the verb is not there, it's implied, right? You can't have a sentence without a verb, can you? No, you can't normally have a sentence without something that acts as a verb. Now, this isn't a verb, but it's acting as a verb. And this we're going to learn about when we get to our... indeclinables. This is taking a root, naha, and adding the dwa ending. Dwa is one of the most common indeclinable suffixes, the most common indeclinable suffix. You add this on the end and it never changes. You add this on the end and it's a past participle, meaning having done whatever it is. So he, one day, eka means one, divasat means day. So he, one day, and then we go to the verb. Skip this. This word here is the object of the verb. Once you've got the subject of the sentence squared away and any time stuff taken out of the picture, go to the end, which... Now, it's gonna take, it takes a lot of time to find it, but to figure out this out, but you'll always stop at the twa. I guess that's easy enough. That's where we end this section. And so that's what we take next. Go straight to the ending, find the verb, and start working your way backwards. This is how you do a Pali translation. Start at the beginning to find the subject. Take out words like this, because they have no place. They just talk about when the sentence happened. They're not grammatically involved. And then go and find the verb at the end of the sentence. That's a standard sentence. Right? So in the first sentence we had a location. And location is like time. Take it out of the way. It has to do with making the setting. Take out words like this because they an indeclinable at the beginning because they just give some information. This one means it is said. Kira means it is said or it happened that, or in Thai they translate it as I have heard. I don't think is what it actually means. Take those out and then you have at the beginning you have a subject. Well, here's your subject. And then you've got these words. This is all your subject. Go to the end, except it's not the end. I said this sentence is problematic because the verb comes next. This is actually the end of the section, and all of these words are just tacked on after the verb. They shouldn't be there, but that's a common exception in Pali, to put lots of descriptions at the end of the sentence as kind of an afterthought. Okay, so here our next section. Here's the ending. Nahatwa, naha, the root naha is in regards to bathing. So nahatwa means having bathed. So he, one day, having bathed, and then this is the, it's not actually the object of the sentence, it's a place.
Is that an aspirated N, or should there be an A in naha?
It's not aspirated. It's a conjunct consonant, two consonants in a row, naha. aspiration is ka. It's ka. There's not actually a kaha. It's ka. And this is naha. In Thai, they actually separate them by saying naha.
Yeah, I didn't think they had compound. That's why they say sawakato instead of swakato.
That's right. And here they would say nahatawa, which really confuses you. Because it should be nahatwa. But my Thai Pali teacher made a good point that you can't really say it without putting a little a in between. Nahatwa. You almost can, but nah. It almost has to have an a in there. But dwa, you definitely can. Dwa doesn't require a dwa. Okay. So here we have a compound. Nahana deep tongue. Again, we have this. This almost looks like the root for bathing, right? And it is actually. This is a noun or a nama form, and it means bathing. So when you take roots and turn them into nouns, you often strengthen the vowel in the root. Strengthen here means turn a into a. So you get nahana. The na is a suffix that turns it into a noun, meaning bathing. Bathing, and then what? Itang means a ford. Ford in the sense of a place where you cross a river, right? So this would be a part of the river that is shallow. Anatitang. This is the bathing ford, or the bathing place. This is actually not the object of the sentence. It's a place, having bathed in. I think you can only translate it as in, even though that's not, because the form of this is ang, which should be a two-one form. It should be the object of the sentence, but that's just, I guess, how they say it in Pali. He bathed the bathing place. But you don't bathe the bathing place, you bathe at the bathing place. Anyway, that's what it is. Nahatwa natwa. This is kind of interesting, literally speaking. It's kind of like a bit of a play on words, or playing with the forms of the words. Natwa means having come, I believe, right? Having returned. Natwa means having returned. Again, we got the twa. So this here is its whole, it's a section in itself. Having returned. Agachanto. This should be familiar, the gacha part. Gacha is a form of the verb gum. Gum, for some reason, turns into gacha. And then anta is a present form. So a actually reverses the meaning. So gachanta means going. Oops. Agachanta means coming. And it's agachanto, because it's modifying so. It's modifying the subject of the sentence. So this is a 1-1 form of agachanta. Agachanta means coming. Agachanto is a 1-1 form. It's the subject of the sentence, referring to he. He, so he, after having done all this, while coming, or coming, it means coming home, right? While he was coming home, and then we've got a new section here. You can't translate any of this next section without finding the ending. Okay, so again, go and find the verb. Until you find a verb or figure out what the verb is, don't start your translation. The subject is still so, it hasn't changed, it's still him. So he, when coming, I think you might want to include agachanto in this section, but it doesn't really matter. Normally you might want to. Here we're not, it's not a big deal. So he, while coming, having seen, then go straight to the ending and say, having seen, diswa, dis is a root in regards to seeing, diswa, diswa is like twa. It should be ditwa probably, but it's an irregular form. Diswa comes from twa, which means having seen. What did he see? This is what he saw. You pick up all three of these words because you see the ang on the ending. Ang, ang, ing, right? If you know anything about our masculine and neuter forms, the ang, ang, and ing endings here are, what form are they?
Accusative.
They're accusative, which means they are the object of the sentence, the object of the of this verb, diswa. Having seen what? He saw. And here you do have to have vocabulary to figure out which one is actually the noun and which one are the adjectives. What's the chief and which are its the things that modify it. Usually it's the last one. Adjectives usually come before, which is the case here, so we're in luck. It's not always the way. Wanapating is a compound. Wana means forest. Pati means chief or lord. So he came, he saw one, he saw a lord of the forest. Ekang means one. He saw one lord of the forest. It's a tree, actually. But wanapati is a word for the biggest tree in the forest. And then we have this adjective. Sampana means complete or complete, full of. And pata means leaves, saka means branches. So with full and lush leaves and branches. That's what he saw.
Agachanto is like our word gachami in the refuge.
Yeah. Gam is irregular in the sense that in present forms, forms that deal with the present and that are active. So not passive, but active forms of the verb gam change to gacha. Gacchati, gacchanti, gacchasi, gacchata, gacchami, gacchama, gacchama, sorry. Yes. And this is part of, this is a present participle, so it also takes gacha from gum.
Thank you.
But gachami is an actual verb. Gachami is present tense, means I go. Gachanto means he goes. He is going, or while going. Not is going. He going to the forest, or that person going to the forest. It's an adjective, actually. It's in the form of a adjective. It's modifying the noun, it's not finishing the sentence. This doesn't mean he is going, it means he going to the, going wherever. Or here, coming, sorry, with the in the front. He coming, no, literally, that's how it is. Okay, so he saw this tree, and then we have another section here. This is our next section. It's a troublesome one for new Pali students, because there's no... Sorry?
Sorry, Bhante, what about Antara Mage?
Did I miss one? Ah, yes, sorry. This is a 7-1 form, which means what?
Two?
No, 7-1 is location. So it's anything with... I said before time, and I guess I should have said location as well. Take them both out. Location and time don't really have a place in our grammar. So you can translate it. You have to translate it as the context applies, and you know different translators, I assume, will use different means. You put it first, put it last, put it in the middle somewhere. This means antara means in between, and magga means path. The a on the end. It could be a two-two form, sorry, but it's not. A 2-2 form also has A on the end, but this A is a 7-1 form. It means in the antaramagga. Antaramagga is a term that means between, means along the path. Antara means in between, but here it means along. Antaramagga means on the side of the path or along the path, along the way. Along the way might be a good literal translation. So yeah, Visuddhi Magga, right? The Visuddhi Magga means the way of purification or the path of purification.
So something like, while coming on the path, he saw the tree.
That's right. Welcoming means welcoming home. Having seen, or you could actually translate it better this way, having seen a tree in the middle of the path while coming home, something like that. I don't know, because the word home isn't here, you better separate and say welcoming, having seen. Very hard to translate this, and you'll see I've kind of fudged it, I think, below. But to translate it literally, you wind up just repeating yourself, having done this, having done that, having done the other thing. It doesn't make much sense in English. It doesn't work that way. So you kind of have to smooth it out when you actually translate it and say, then he did this, and then he did this, rather than saying having all the time. But that's really how it works in Pali and Sanskrit. They just string everything together in one sentence. Having done this, having done this, having done this, he did this, finally. This one is the worst. This sentence is one of the worst. On and on and on, and then finally, pakami. Very end. Which means he left, I think. Okay, saw the tree. Then we have this section here that's problematic. Problematic because the section itself doesn't have a verb. The quotation, inside the quotation, it's a fairly simple sentence. A little bit weird, but grammatically speaking, it's not unordinary. But the phrase itself is just a quote. There's just this quote here, and that's common in Pali with quotes. They don't often specify what's the context of the quote. Is someone thinking it, or speaking it, or telling it, asking it? Not often will it give you the actual word, so we have to supply it here. Here we would translate it as thinking this, thinking such and such. We have the ti on the end, which is actually supposed to be iti. And if you look closely, you'll see bhavisati has a long I on it. Shouldn't have a long I. Long bhavisati should be with short I. But because you have iti on the end, this is sandhi. This is what we're going to learn about hopefully next week. Then we dive right into sandhi. It's just sandhi is just a bit of a... I don't know, so there's a lot to go through. It's not hard, but it's just a bunch, and I'd rather wait till next week to go through it. Fun. So we're not doing it. Bhavisati is the verb, should be short I, but here we have iti. Iti means thus, more or less, or in this way, or as follows. So thinking, and then literally you could translate it as thinking as follows, Right? Thinking thus, put the quote, but you don't have to. In English, we don't always, we usually omit that part. So thinking, and then you go inside the sentence. Once you've got the section worked out, which we just did by adding the word thinking, then you go inside the quote and start working within. So here we have a sentence in quotes. And here we don't have a subject of the sentence. It's got everything to do with the subject except the subject itself. So you have to imply. The word that you imply here is wanapatting. Did I wreck that? Patting. Right, so that's implied. It's not in the sentence, but you're talking about the tree. Ayang. Ayang means this. If you remember from the pronouns, this is a neuter form, masculine, I think. It's a masculine form of ida, which means this, irregular as well. Anyway, so this, meaning this tree, in Thai, this is a horrible sentence to translate. It's horribly convoluted. We have a bit of a problem in English because we can't translate the rest of this stuff, even though it modifies ayang, or it modifies wanapati. The implied wanapati is the subject of the sentence. All of this stuff is a adjective describing the noun. Now, if I remember correctly, this has to do with the verb bhavisati, because bhavisati means will be. Bhava or bu is the root that means to be in regards to being. Isa is a future, a participle, whatever you call it, future indicator, and ati is the third person singular ending. So will be. Bhavisati means will be. He will be. That masculine thing will be. Now, first of all, will be, by this, it's just a colloquial form that means should be, probably is. I bet that will be, kind of thing. Not talking about what it will be in the future. It's a colloquial form, kind of like in English, how we say, that's going to be something to check out or something like that. That tree is going to be full of, that tree is going to be full of this, right? When you see a tree and you're going to go explore it, because you mean, once I explore it, I'm going to find out that it's full of wasps or something like that. That tree is going to be full of wasps. It doesn't mean future, it will be. It means it is, and once I check it out, I will find that it is. So this just means is, really. Or I bet that is. That's not a big problem. The big problem here is with verbs, I think specifically like bhavisati, like that describe existence, you have what are called, I can't remember, reflexive, I don't know, special type of adjectives that actually serve as a object to the sentence. So what this means is this one, meaning this great tree, will be, and then you translate all this stuff, even though it's in a 1-1 form. Parigahito is 1-1. These ones are not. These two are even more difficult. They complicate it even further. In English, it's not a big problem because you're not conjugating stuff, not the way you do in Pali. But once you conjugate it, it all gets very convoluted. This thing will be parigahito. Parigahita means, it's a very complicated word. Pari means thoroughly, or like parinibbana. Gah means to grasp. Ita is a participle. So this is means that tree will be something that has been grasped completely or been taken over, been colonized. Taken over might be a good translation. So this tree will be one that has been taken over, and then we have this. The aya ending is a 3-1 form, though you wouldn't know that unless you understand the context here, because it has to be taken over by someone. Parigahita is passive, so it doesn't mean the tree has taken over. The e is hints at that, not a definite indication, but hints at the fact that this is passive, means the tree has been taken over by a devata. Devata is feminine, devata. So instead of devatena, if it was masculine, you'd have devena. That also works. Deva is masculine. So devena would be masculine. Devataya. Aya is the feminine 3-1 ending. So it's been taken over by an angel. And this is an adjective that modifies devata. Been taken over by a mahesaka devata. The a is missing, and this is again sandhi, sort of. With sandhi, you get rid of the a if you want. You don't always, but you have to, because a and a don't easily go together. So you get rid of it, and you have maha isaka. It might be isaka, actually. So the a and the e might have become a. Not sure about that, but isaka or asaka means with great power. Maha isaka or asaka. So this tree will be one that has been taken over by an angel of great power. This is important because this angel is what lets the Bodhi tree and so on grant you wishes, if they decide. Apparently these angels can grant you wishes. Brenna tells us Kasapa is a turtle. Kachapa, so Kasapa. Kasapa means turtle. Is anyone following me, or are we all? Are you following this?
Yes.
Like, is it? It's not that confusing, right?
No.
Good. I think it's important that you get this kind of flavor. To actually see, rather than just dealing with grammatical terms, get a sense of the sorts of things. And then as we go through the actual grammar, as far as we're going to get, start to flesh out, and you'll already have some context.
It's good too to see so many of the words have, you know, little parts of them that are familiar root words.
Yeah. Okay, so having thought this, then we go on to the next section, which is this section. Again, we know it because there's a twa at the end there. Again, we don't have the subject because we're still dealing with he. It's still so. It's still the same sentence. It's just a section. So they don't repeat the word so. Sodha petwa, this is an interesting because sod means in regards to cleaning, sweeping, or you know, straightening up. And this little part here is causative. It's actually nape. there's a N with a dot under it that gets always removed. So I'm not even sure why it's there, but it's supposed to be there. When we learn about verbs, you'll learn about that. Anyway, apeg is a giveaway that makes it causative, meaning he didn't clean, but having caused someone else to clean means he got some guys to clean. He's a rich man, so he didn't do it himself. He got his bodyguards or his servants, or he paid someone, some kids or something, to clean. And what did they clean? They cleaned this. The heta bhaga tasa. Tasa is 6-1. Remember I said how asa is a giveaway? Almost always, or mostly 6-1. Can also be 4-1, but much more common is 6-1. Coming right before that which is owned. That's that which is possessed. So it's the something of something. Or something's something. Dasa. Dasa is the 6-1 form of da. Right? So is the 1-1 form. Here's 1-1. Well, here's 6-1.
Anapta-pindikasa arame?
Yes. The arama of... in the arama, or at the arama of anatapindika. Or probably more literally even is at anatapindika's arama. Arame is 7-1. Locative, it's a location.
Thank you, Michael.
Why did I think that that would be tasso because of the so?
O is only 1-1. One is 6-1. That's that.
Thank you.
So, heta bhaga. Bhaga, again, I already mentioned this word, like parts of the sentence. This means a part or a section. Heta means the bottom. Or it's an adjective that means below, or the underneath. So heta bhaga means the under section, so under the tree. The section under the tree, or the area under the tree. The area under, or the under area of das, of da, which is referring to the vanapati. Not clear. It just means the underside of it, or him. So we have to decide, are they cleaning his underpart, or are they cleaning the tree's underpart, or whose underpart are they cleaning? Where it's actually referring to the tree. It's probably not getting someone to clean his underbelly. So he got some guys to clean it up, and then he did this. Karapetwa. Then we have the ape, which makes it causative. So he didn't do it. Again, he's getting someone to do something. Kar, it comes from kar. The short a form is in regards to making, karma, right? This is doing or making. Building. Nape, this... suffix nape, the N, what it actually does is strengthens this. So the N always disappears, shouldn't even be there really, but it's an indicator, a reminder that we should strengthen the vowel. So here we're strengthening it.
I'm actually seeing an R.
There is an R. Karapitva. So this means having caused someone to build, in this case, because they're building something. Having caused someone to build two things. This. Bakara. What does bakara mean? Oh, no, that's right. A bakara is a wall, and parikhepa is surrounding. Bhakara parikhepa, a wall that surrounds, I believe. A surrounding wall. So he got some guys to build a wall around it. And then we have another thing that he caused someone to do. We have again Ape and Okir. Kir means to spread, I think. O is a prefix that means down. So having laid down caused some people to sprinkle down Waluka, which means sand, right? Caused some guys to sprinkle sand around the bottom. And then Usape Twa, having caused, again the Ape, and the Twa, Usape Twa, having caused to raise up Danja Patakang, which means flag and banner. Banner and flag.
Sorry, he's just taken over this angel tree, isn't he?
He certainly has. Hopefully it's on his land. If not, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, in India at the time, it would have been doing everyone a favor. All the peasants were probably too poor to do such a thing, so, or too poor to complain, so he's helping out local real estate values. But it seems he actually claimed it, right? Danja means he put up his own flags. Or he put up flags anyway. Alankaritva. Alankaritva is an interesting word. It actually means having made, and then alang means enough. So literally means having done enough. But alankara means to decorate. Alang enough is, in this kind of colloquial here, often used colloquially to mean done proper or done what is proper thing, made proper, having made it proper, which colloquially means having decorated. Having decorated the vanapati. And this is the object of the sentence, so this one is summing it up. He did all this stuff and basically just decorated it. Or maybe he did more to decorate it, I don't know. Anyway, he decorated it. And then this, Anjaling Karitwa, having made Anjali. Anjali means putting your hands up to your chest. Having held his hands up to his chest. And then we have this. You see how interesting, you have katwa here and karitwa here. I'm pretty sure they mean the same thing, although here it could be passive. So karitwa may mean that he made his hands, he made something else. Oh no, sorry. What would this be? No, it has to be the same. Karitwa and katwa means having done. I don't know that there's any different sense that can be had here, but that's certainly not passive. But anyway, having made a patanang. Patana means... Yeah, namaskar is just a word that means making homage. Namas means homage, like namotasa. It literally means namotasa. Oh no, sorry, namaskara. Namas means homage, and kar means it's karma, so making homage. Any form of homage is namaskara. Anjali is actually referring to the... No, Anjali refers to the hands. Namaskara could be any form of paying homage. It's actually more the state of mind or the intention behind one's acts. Anjali is specifically refers to the hand movement. So having made a patana. Patana means asservation, determination, wish, basically. Of asservation, determination, intention, that kind of thing. Thus, promise in this case. He makes a promise, a vow. And his vow is, and here we have a sentence that's in two parts. Again, remember I said J means if? Well, Satya also means if. A little bit of a different, well, basically the same thing. Satya, if, and then you have the sentence. If what? With regards to if, you have to change the form of the verb. So here we have labeyang. Labeyang, which means lab in regards to gaining or obtaining. Labeya, labeyang, means I should gain, may gain, I may gain. So when you're saying if, you have to say may. If I may, or if I should, if I were to. Literally, the best way to translate this is should, although in English, the word should could mean something completely different, right? But here, if I should gain, that's the verb. Once we have the verb, let's work backwards. This sentence doesn't have a subject. The subject, again, is implied I. So this is very common. Why? Because ayang already tells you, if you know the grammar, that this is a first-person verb. It means I. I should gain. If I should gain, what? And then we have the object. Putta means son. Ditara means daughter. These are both 2-1, meaning they're the object of the sentence. When you say or and end, you look down here. You have cha. You can see that? When you say or end, A and B, A or B, Pali has this, and Sanskrit have this curious way of saying it by putting the word or after each object, for each word. So this literally means son or daughter or. But that's how you say it. Utangwa di tarangwa. In English, it means a son or a daughter. And at the bottom there, that other one I showed you, it means, A means in. So in the path to heaven and the path to mokha, which means freedom. Sangha mangeta, mokha mangeta.
So va is always or, and cha is always end.
That's right.
Thank you.
Used in the same way. So if I should gain a son or a daughter, and then you have the second part of the sentence. Is the then. You don't always have the then. You often don't have the then part. So if I should get this, then... Again, we don't have a subject here. We have as a verb, karisami. Again, that long e on the end should be a short e, but because of ti, it becomes long. Karisami plus iti, the e and the e become e. Karisami iti. Karisami, again, it's this is future, is, the is part. Means future. Ami is first person. Kar in regards to making. I will make. So if I get a son or a daughter, means if you help my wife to get pregnant, which is a very sort of suspicious activity for angels to be involved in. Somehow angels can, you know, we were talking about this last week, and it could just mean that he's inviting one of the angels that live in the tree, or the angel that lives in the tree, to come down and be born in his wife's womb. or find me an angel that's ready to be reborn, to come and gain rebirth in the womb of my wife.
And an angel would presumably want to be born as a human?
Well, a rich human. No, because at the end of their life in heaven, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, huh? Hard to be born as an angel. They probably want to. They probably know they have to come back because it's hard to do good deeds in heaven. I think there's some idea that it's hard. There's too much fun in heaven, so they have to come back to earth to do good deeds.
Seems and they get all the nutty cakes.
No, I think Bhante, you have to keep to the five precepts.
What about the five precepts?
To be born in one of the sensual realms.
You mean to be born as a human or an angel, you have to keep the precepts?
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, I'm echoing. I don't know how to turn that off.
You only need to meditate to go to Brahma realms. You don't have to meditate to go to heavenly worlds.
Or are you editing? Are you echoing or am I echoing? Echo.
How about now?
Well, that's better. I switched the echo cancellation. Sorry, say again?
To get into Brahma was you need to meditate and attain the jhanas. But if you keep the five precepts, as I heard, if you keep the five precepts, there's a high chance that you end up in one of the heavens. That is lesser than Brahma realms.
Yeah, the angels require a little more than five precepts, I think. That's how you're reborn as a human. But I'm not quite sure what exactly you're... What does that have to do with what I'm saying? What we're saying?
To help a woman to get pregnant?
Right. I don't get it. I mean, my question is, or Robin's question is, why would anyone want to be born as a human? Why would an angel want to? Or would an angel want to be born as a human? And I was saying, well, probably they have no choice because it's hard to be born in heaven. Up in heaven to get a second go at it. In many cases, I mean, I guess the point is when you're not a Buddhist angel, you forget about it. When you get to heaven, you just kind of start enjoying yourself. You think, wow, now I'm in heaven. I made it. Permanent bliss. And so you waste all your time doing fun things, happy things. And then when it's over, you realize, uh-oh, got to go back. So then he's like thinking, well, for those angels that have finished in heaven, why doesn't one of them come and be my son?
I think the angel you are praying to, he or she would know whose life is about to expire in heaven, and yeah. Then they would suggest.
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I happen to get a son or a daughter, I will make karisami. What will I make? Maha sakarang. Sakara means homage or devotion or some kind of act of probably comes from Sankara, means good doing. So I will do something good for you. But it's taken on a meaning. Sakara means offering flowers, candles, incense, holding some big ceremony. Maha means big, great. So this means if it happens, I'll make a great offering or a great thing of homage. Tumhakang is a 4-2 form of tumha. Tumha means you. Tumhakang means to you or for you. But you all, actually, this is plural. Plural in Pali is often used for singular individuals when you're paying respect. So you use the plural form as a means of respect. It's kind of like how the queen says we, that kind of thing. Buddha often refers to himself as we. It's kind of a royal thing. The king will say we. It's the royal we. But in Pali, when you're talking about someone else, you often use the plural. Like when monks talk to the Buddha, they will often use... in fact, they'll often use third person... I'm not sure. Wait just a second. Anyway, they'll often use a plural form. And so here he's respectfully addressing the angel, saying to you. So he makes a wish to the angel, a vow to the angel, or to the tree, not figuring that there's an angel listening, saying, I will make a great homage for you, to you. Okay, having done that, pakami, you'd think that would be ami, like kachami, or, right, here we have what, karisami. But this is actually a past form. Pa means, in this case, out, and kam means to travel or to go. Pakami means went out. The e on the end is a past marker, and pa and kam mean together mean to go out, in regards to going out. So pakami means went out, left, or away, went away, right?
That makes it easier to remember when you can refer about the plural when making homage. How the kings and queens would refer to themselves in the third person.
When we pay homage, we don't usually use the... We use the third person. Namotasa means homage to him. Namaste means homage to you, and it's also singular. But in this case, it's second person singular, to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I think that's our class for today. Next week we'll do Sunday, promise.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bhante.
Welcome.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thanks, Bhante. Thanks, everyone, for your patience and attention.
Thank you, Bhante.
Darwan Sarnai.
Thank you, Bhante.
Darwan Sarnai.
In Thailand, what was one teacher doing? Soti te hotu acharya. He had a way of greeting in Pali and leaving in Pali. See, the Thai monks would all have their students say, most of the Thai monks would have their students say, Sawatdee khap pa ajan. And we all had to say that in unison when the teacher came in. And when the teacher left, we all had to say, Khap kun khap pra ajan. Thank you, venerable sir, or teacher. So this one teacher that I had, he was a very high-level Pali, and he had us do it in Pali. Sotite hotu acharya, which means basically sawaddi, but it's literally may well-being be to you, teacher. And then when we left, sadhu. Sadhu bhante. Maybe it was just sadhu bhante. I can't remember. Yeah, I think at the end it was sadhu bhante. But so let's have everyone say that. That's the way of ending the course. You all have to say to me now, sadhu bhante.
Sadhu
bhante.
Sadhu bhante.
There we go. And when you show up, you can all say, I don't want to do it. It's so a self-aggrandizing to have you say that. But I think sadhu bhante is appropriate.
Don't think that it's self-aggrandizing. It's good practice for us.
But well, that's the thing.
Could you actually type it in? Because unless I see it, it's so hard to remember.
No, I started to type it tonight.
Forget it. I'm not going to put it in because then you guys are all going to say it and I'm just going to feel embarrassed.
No, that's good practice.
No, you got lots of practice already.
Look at all these people. Everybody wants to say it. Thank you, Sanka.
Thank you, Sanka.
You spelled so. You spelled so. Soti should have an H after the T's. And Sabada should have an long A on the end. And that's not what I was saying anyway. That's a part, he's giving you a part of a blessing. Which means by this true speech, may there be well-being to you for all times. It's what monks say to, after they do this, their chanting, they say, by the power of this true speech that I have made, may there be well-being to you, specific to chant, to giving blessings. That's what monks say.
It would be better if you told us the other thing, otherwise we're going to be saying what monks say.
You can just say hello, Bande. Oh, let's do it this way then. No? He did change it. That's right. He just said this. Soti bhante. That's right. Got it. Okay. When you arrive, everyone has to say soti bhante. This is good. And when you leave, you say
sadhu bhante.
Bhante. Yes, that's. I remember it now.
Awesome. Thank you.
So when you arrive, you can't do that at a monastery. Most monks wouldn't have a clue what you're saying. But in Pali class, you have to do it. And you can do it at the beginning of our Visuddhimagga class as well. You say, Soti Bhante. And when you leave, you have to say, Sadhu Bhante. Soti means, literally it means well-being. But it's a common, in Thailand anyway, I can't remember whether they actually use it in the Pali, but it's a common greeting. Doti? Soti. Soti, yes. Yeah, I've given talks on this before. So you have the... Anyone know what this is? Have you ever seen that word before?
Swatika.
Yeah, well, the swastika should actually be spelt this way. With a V. Should, I don't know. This is the romanization, should be with a V, is normally with a V. Sva-asti-ka. These are the three parts of that word. Or the ending might be ika if you want to be correct. Actually, I think the ending should be nika. So, sva plus asti. Actually, you want to be literal. Nika. That's the word. So let's break this down. Oops, I got that wrong. Sva plus plus ati plus ika nika. So swa is the Sanskrit form of, in Pali we say su. Us is a root meaning to be. Asti is the third person singular form. That's where ati, the ending ati. Us is irregular, so it becomes asti. And nika should actually, the n should actually strengthen the vowel, but because the vowel a is followed by a conjunct consonant, you don't strengthen it. I wonder if swastika, swastika, it might actually be a long A. I wonder if anyone can, our Naga, can you tell us whether it's a long A swastika in swastika? It might be a long A in swastika, I'm not sure. Swastika. No, it shouldn't be. Okay, and then ika, so you get, ika means that which owns, that which, in this case, brings. So swastika is the bringer of swa asti, swasti. Swa means good or well, asti means, asti is actually he, it's a third person singular form, so I'm not quite clear why it's in third person form. But it means well-being. It's colloquial usage because it should be, it shouldn't probably be a third person singular. Astika means being. Swastika means well-being. So in Pali, this is su ati. Swa in Pali is su instead, and asti, the verb as or the root as, when you add ati on the end, you get ati, which is terribly irregular, but much easier to say than asti. So Pali simplifies things. Su ati. This is where the nati cakes come from. Na ati. Su ati. And in Pali, su plus ati equals soti. So that's where the word soti comes from. That's why we say soti bante.
I know that's the root for Thai and Cambodian too. Swasadai and Sawatli.
Somebody who knows Cambodian, I'm impressed. Swasadai. Swasadai, same, yes. Sawatli in Thai, they corrupted as usual. Sawatli. The us on the end becomes at. So, sawat. D. And D is, D actually means good. So they think it means good something. But it should actually be swasti. Swasti. Yeah. A lot of Thai words come from Sanskrit. Same goes with Sri Lankan and Cambodian.
It was really difficult in Cambodian to get used to hearing, instead of tipitaka, traipitok. They use the Sanskrit word for three, but everything else will be the Pali.
Well, in Thai as well, it's Pat Taipidok.
Bante, is swastika, is that literally the swastika like that's sometimes on the Buddha?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Hindu symbol, actually. It's not from Germany. They took it from India. It's probably even older than Hinduism. It's the symbol of the sun, I think.
I think the direction that the legs are going make it, like sun or moon. I know there's two.
No, I didn't hear that. But I know the one in Buddhism is going one way and the Nazi one is going the other way. I didn't hear about sun and moon. It's interesting.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, Hitler was obsessed with the Aryan people. That's why he came up. He used the word to describe his super people. So it was an Aryan symbol. That's correct. In fact, the word Aryan was misappropriated as well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Although the Aryans were not much better than, it seems, much better than the Nazis. They went into India and just decimated the people who lived there.
Well, I think that's how we got the caste system. All the lower castes were the darker Dravidians, and then the higher castes were closer to Aryan.
That's right. I don't know about using the word Dravidian. I'm not very familiar with, I mean, I know what the word is, but they had another word, Malaka or Malika? Malaka, I think. Malaka. Interesting. There's pre-Aryan civilizations in India, not just like people living in the woods or something. There are some big cities that they don't even know much about these people because the Aryans just came in and decimated them and built their own civilization. So all you have left of them is these, like Shiva, as we assume comes from them. Kali, you know, some of these gods. I don't know about like Ganesha, Hanuman, and that kind of thing. I think they might have been later, but at least Shiva is like the lingas, right? These phallic symbols, clearly something indigenous. Probably Ganesha comes from a similar place. Anyway, that's all for today. Thank you all for tuning in. And see you all next week.
Sadhu Bhante.
All right, Ganesha comes from Shiva, sorry. But that may have been, yeah, probably right. I think Hanuman, you can't say that because Hanuman was just from a specific story, right? The Ramayana. So that's later. Hanuman's later.
Yeah, Hanuman is mentioned in Ramayana.
Right? But Ganesha, no. Ganesha, Kali, that's all Shiva stuff. Okay, bye.